Last week I talked about developing five-star relationships with each other and how in order to develop a five-star relationship, we have to have a consistent time. We have to put consistent time into it. It can't be a once-in-a-while thing. And when we do that, it has to be quality time that we put in there. There has to be trust in that, if we're in that relationship. If you're in a really a good relationship, you have trust and you have stability. You have to have authenticity. If I can say it, then you can have it, okay? Or what some people call transparency, being able to really put forth yourself in what you're doing. But most of all, you need Jesus Christ. Because of our nature, we mess things up and Jesus sets them right. In that relation, in that time, we have people that are not. We have a lot of people who are not, don't fall into that five-star category. Because not everybody that you know does. But we need those people in our lives too. And that's what I want to talk about today. We have to have more relationships and we need them. And in Ecclesiastes, most of what I'm going to talk about today comes from Ecclesiastes 4, 8 through 12. But in verse 9, what the author does, he's kind of painting two pictures. And so verse 9 is the pivot point where they go, the two pictures swing. And in Ecclesiastes 4, 9, it says, two are better than one. Can you say that? Two are better than one. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to get into this, into the thing. And Ecclesiastes, like 9 is the pivot point. Ecclesiastes 8 is the foundation that King Solomon builds for verse 9 through 12. And so it's that hinge. And on one side of the paper, easel, whatever you want to call it, is a picture of people who are in relationships and who are relational, have relational wealth. And on the opposite side is a person who's not in relationships and is in relational poverty. I can tell you, I have been on both sides. And what he talked about here was crucial then, but 3,000 years ago before our time and 1,000 years before Jesus, this was important. And it's just as important now, maybe even a little bit more, because we have a lot of things of stuff in our culture that today that they didn't have back then. And so it makes it more important now than it was even then. Now, what's this?
A cell phone.
A cell phone. It's funny how this has evolved, because back then they didn't have cell phones. And I can remember back when we got our first phone at our house, it was a party line. How many of you remember those party lines? Yeah. Yeah, you got to pick it up, and if somebody else wasn't on the phone, then you could use it. Or if you were sneaky, you could get in and listen to their conversations. Okay. And then we got to where all the things were private. And then out came the first cell phone. And things changed. My first cell phone was 25 cents a minute for the call. And there was a roaming fee. If you got too far away from the tower, they charged you $8 roaming fee. And what this little phone does, it enables me to have loose relationships with anybody in the world. If I can find the phone number and I can dial it, I can have a relationship, a loose, casual relationship. You know, when you were gone, did you ever call home? Yeah. So halfway around the world, you're calling home.
Every day.
Every day. Okay. And so you can have this relationship. Now, yours is a close relationship. It better be. Right? Okay. But it enables us to have loose relationships too. And those people that are the loose relationships, they're not just like you're talking to somebody you've never met, dialing a number going, hi, who's this? Okay. But we can't have, if I just did that, I could start talking to the person, but I wouldn't have a close relationship. It would be loose because I can't see the expressions and things like that. That's what Scott always razzes me about, because it'll be somebody's birthday and I'll text, I'll say, happy birthday to you. Happy, and he'll say, they can't hear you singing. It's like they're glad. They can't hear me singing. But we can build those relationships, but they're loose relationships, and we can have those with anybody. But not everybody can be a close relation, a close connection. But we've got to have those connections too, because we need people in our lives. Two are better than one is the hinge, because in the first part, 8, it's going to build the foundation for what we're going to talk about. And I may be a little bit all over the place because I put out my notes and then I usually refine them down and get them organized. Sometime during the thing, our copy machine decided not to work. And so I've got 20 pages of notes. Have you got the time? I want to go through each of these a verse at a time. But anyway, the first part here is two are better than one because they have a good return. Isn't there something better than that? Oh, two are better than one, the first one. Let's go back to 8 now. In this first part of verse 8, it says, there was a man all alone. He had neither son nor brother. There was no end to his toil, yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. For whom am I toiling, he asked, and why am I depriving myself of enjoyment? This too is meaningless, a miserable business. Now, I'll have you go back to the very first of 8 again, and we'll go through this a little bit. And it says, there was a man all alone. And what it's talking about, here's this guy, he has no son, he has no brother, and he's toiling all by himself, and there's no end to his toil. What he's saying is that he has nothing, and there's no end, relational-wise, he doesn't have a relation. There's no end to his toil. He's the guy that's climbing the career ladder. He's working his way to the top. He's the first one in the office in the morning. He's the first one. He's the last one to leave at night. He's doing everything he can. When he gets home, he eats leftovers from the microwave, heated up, and he stands at the island in the kitchen and eats the food without even sitting down. And he says he toils. And there's no end to the toil. And yet his eyes are not content with his wealth. He's able to make a lot of money, but he's not content with what he has. Have you ever been that way? I've had times when I've been that way, and it's like I wasn't content. And it's one of those things where you look at it and you go, why? Why am I not content? And there's a lot of different reasons why it's that way. I didn't have a lot of wealth because I spent my money faster than I could make it. So I had a lot of debt. But what this is, why would you do that? Why would you work like that? We hear about people in the world out there, in the financial world, who just make money up all over the place. And I looked at that and I thought, okay, this one guy I read about, he had $95 billion. $95 billion. Another guy had $24 million. Now, $24 million. How much is $1 million going to do for you? Okay. You don't know. You'd like to find out, though, huh? Yeah. Okay. But it didn't dawn on me how much it was until I thought about it. $1 million, you could spend $1,000 a day for 3 years. What's that?
Bring it on.
Bring it on. You want to give it $1,000 a day for about 3 years with $1 million. And then I thought, okay, you got $1 million, but there's other things I'd like to do. I would like to give some of it away to different things. And then after I got thinking about that part of it, it's like, really, that's not that much money. And I thought I'd never hear myself say, $1 million isn't that much. But it's one of the things that happens. And so we look at that and we see how much it really isn't. But these people, he had $24 million and he was going to prison for tax evasion because $24 million was not enough. $24 million. Not enough. And that's what this is talking about. His eyes were not content with his wealth. And what's happening is he's playing a game that can't be won. And it's called the more game. How much is just a little bit more? I'll let you know when I get there. It never happens. You never reach that end. It's more. We always have to have just a little bit more. And in thinking about winning the lottery and stuff like that, what you would do with it. It's like $87 million. And then thinking, no, I guess I better have $120 million. And it's like, you got to play that game of just a little bit more. But often, people who, what they're saying, he's saying here, this guy's playing that game of a little bit more, and he's not content with what he has. But also, what does he say? He doesn't have a son. He doesn't have a brother. Or a sister, or a daughter. You know, back then they talked about just men. But he doesn't have anything. Why is that important? Because when he takes his last breath, where is it going to go? Where is it going to go? Abraham was in a pickle because he said, I'm making all this money, and it's going to go to my servant. And what did the angel say? No, it won't. It's going to go to your son. I'm 100. I don't have one. But Abraham, the difference with Abraham is Abraham's goal was not to make as much money as he could. He was blessed. He was making the money. But he was looking at, I don't have anybody to give it to. He wasn't looking at it like this guy was through eyes that say, more, 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 more. I want more. And I got to have more. Okay. Now, are any of you climbing the corporate ladder? Is this any of you? Am I talking to the wall? You're talking to the wall. Okay. No, because that's just an example. We have a lot of things that distract us in this world, away from things. We have a lot of things that do that. Our next food frenzy. We got to go get something to eat. We get preoccupied with food. We get preoccupied with taking pictures. Oops, sorry. But you want to take pictures. But the whole thing is it a preoccupation? Is it dominating your life? Is Instagram dominating your life? Is Netflix? I don't have Netflix. But why don't I have Netflix? Because this would be me. I would watch every single episode of every single series of the Green Arrow. Well, it's not called Green Arrow, it's called just Arrow. Or Merlin. I'm a visual addict. I have movies at home. Love, Simon. I've seen it at least 20 times. I think I'm getting Alzheimer's. I can't remember that I watched it, so I watch it again. No, I know that I watched it, but I watch it with the same intensity. We can get just as caught up with that, and that takes our time, and that's what's consuming our life and taking up all of our time. It is so easy for me to just watch movies. Back in the 80s, early 80s, when they were just coming out with VHS, remember that? I bought me a VHS. Cost me $500. What was brand? You know? And you'd go rent a movie for $4 a day. I'd go rent them five at a time. And I would sit there in my apartment, painting chess pieces, and watching movies for hours and hours. And hours. Then there was that time in my life when I just was using it to escape because I'd just been in a relationship and on another lousy breakup. And it was like, isn't there anybody in this world worth dating? And so I used TV as an escape to avoid a hurt. Been there, done that? And so you just do it. This guy's happens to be money, happens to be wealth. For whom am I toiling, he asked. One day you wake up and you say, why? Why am I doing this? Who am I going to leave all this to? Sometimes while Scott and I look at stuff, we have stuff from his mother. Some oil paintings that his aunts painted. And they're good. They're portraits. His aunt won prizes for them. They're home in a box in the armoire because Scott doesn't want to put them on the wall because he's afraid they'll fade. And I said, Scott, when your mother passed away, your brothers did not want any of these paintings. When you die, they're not going to want them either, then just because they're yours now, not your mom's. So they're going to get sold in a yard sale for 50 cents or a dollar. Why are we keeping them from fading? Why are we not having them all? Why are we not enjoying our wealth? Why are we not enjoying the paintings? And then I realized why we don't have them out. We'd have to clean them. Don't laugh. You've been to my house. I have fragile glasses. They're held up by cobwebs. If somebody moves one, I know where it goes. Not intentionally, it's just that we're lazy. Scott keeps saying, I'm going to hire Karen to come in and clean the house, but we got to clean it first. We're both semi-hoarders. Neither one of us have children. Neither one of us wanted to, because we're just not built that way. But it's like, okay, we have a house. It'll go to my sister and his, divided up between my sister and his two brothers when we die. But they're old like us. So who knows? You'll take it? Okay, we have one bid right over here. Anybody else want to put in a bid? But that's one of the things. This guy here, he's, you know, I'm deprived of enjoyment. And when you get caught in those things, those addictions, pursuing certain things, you're not happy with it. You may act like it, but you're not happy with it. And he says, this is too is meaningless. That's what he says all the time. It's all meaningless and miserable. So this is what it is. Pursuing that. And when you're in those, because you're deprived of relationships. And like I say, sometimes you're deprived of those relationships on purpose because you've been hurt and you don't want to be hurt again. Been there, done that. I worked for 9 years, 2 full-time jobs. I didn't have time. And I was building a house at the same time. I didn't have time for relationships because I didn't want them. But verse 9 says, two are better than one because they have a good return for their work. Somebody's going to get what they inherit, what they have. You get a good return. Somebody's going to get some joy, enjoyment out of it because you work together. Back in the 70s, early 70s, I had a friend of mine. We were in a partnership. We had several houses that we had for rental units. We'd go work on those houses, and we had a great time together because we were working on it together, not because I was working on it. I had a house over here on Kelsey that I did most of the work on. I didn't enjoy it all that much. That kept me busy, so I didn't have to have a relationship. So they return their work. If one falls down, his friend can help him up. But pity the man who falls and has no one to help him up. If one falls down, you've got to put it in context. We have automobiles. For us to go from here to the point of the mountain is not a big deal. But if you have to go 20 miles 3,000 years ago, that's a long walk. And it's not like walking on sidewalks or the road. It was trails. It took a long time. Have anybody ever walked 30 miles? Was it fun? Did it take a long time?
Oh, yeah, a long time.
It took a long time. And your feet get so sore. Yeah. A friend of mine and I went to California. He's 6'4". We're in my little MGB. And we get over in California seeing one of his friends, and we want to go over and see the strip where all the stars are. And so we come home from where we were, and we change clothes. I left my wallet at home, but we drove over there, and the car broke down. We were calling his friend to see if he could come and get us. His friend had unplugged the phone because he worked and wasn't there. So we ended up walking 30 miles to his house because we didn't have enough money for the cab. It takes a long time. The average person walks 3 miles an hour if it's good walking conditions. Part of that time we were walking in the night. Good time to be able to sprain your ankle, break your ankle, and have troubles. And back in those days, there were lions and tigers and bears, oh my. And there were bad people in that time. And if you're there and you're halfway there and you sprain your ankle, you've got two choices. Turn around and go back 15 miles or keep going 15 miles. And if you keep going, either one, it's going to be hard. It's going to slow you down a lot. And chances are you're going to end up spending the night beside the road in a tent. And also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Now, anybody ever had one of the situations like this? I did when I was 11. My brother was 7. My mom was pregnant with my sister 1 month. And my dad and mom and us used to go for Sunday drives. Do you ever do that? And they would just get in the car and they'd pull out to the road and say, which way are we going to go? Okay. When they got to someplace, which way are we going to go? Well, we did this one particular Sunday. We got in our truck, pickup truck, the four of us. We were just going for a ride. And the weather down here was nice. So my dad decided we were going to take a ride up through Logan. We got up to Logan and decided to come across the Ant Flats back over to Monte Cristo and back down. The problem was up there, there was snow. So we're driving up in there. And we started out late in the afternoon because it was just not going to be there on that long. We got into the snow. My dad kept pushing it. And then we slid off the road sideways and high-centered. So here we are in the mountains. Nobody knows where we are because we didn't tell them where we were going because we didn't know where we were going. Didn't have any food. And my mother was wearing a sweater. Not a heavy sweater, not very warm, you know, not very heavy. And underneath the seat was a rug that my dad had put underneath the jacks to keep him from rattling. It was about this big, and it was little swans, and it was made of pom-poms balls. Really heavy duty. There was a stream beside the truck, and it got dark, and my dad smoked. And so Dad would put one arm in the sweater. They'd stretch it around my mother, put her arm in the sweater. Then she'd hug into us, and he'd hug into Mom. Jay was in the middle, and I was here with the little rug on top of me in the dark. And my dad found a can. He threw some water up on the snowbank, and it froze. He jacked the truck up, put some more snow underneath, threw water on it. In the course of the night, the stream froze. We're huddled in there. He smoked, and so if he lit a match, he'd hold it right to the very end. Didn't have a lot of gas, so we couldn't leave the engine running. And eventually, we got it up, and he pushed the truck over enough, far enough, that it got back on a solid ground, and the sun was coming up. And we managed to turn around and get back out of there. We got down to Logan, and we pulled in a little station, and we got Twinkies. That's all they had. There was, you know. But we were there. And Mom says the incredible thing was we didn't complain and cry. Even as little kids, we just snuggled in. But there were four of us in the cab of that truck. We kept warm enough not to be hurt or injured, no frostbite, any of that stuff. It's very real. When I went on a mission up in Canada, in the mission home, one of the first things we had was snow survival. Because parts of Canada, it gets really cold. Candles in the glove compartment. Blankets in the trunk. So, yeah, two can lie down together and they will keep warm. But how will one keep warm alone? And that was with just a little snuggy rug and a sweater. So it works. Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. Though one may be overpowered. Traveling back then, you didn't know what was around the next corner. If you were traveling alone, you were in deep trouble probably. Because you had to have money with you. You got to eat. And you can't take the kitchen stove with you. And so you're usually in trouble. And so when Mary and Joseph traveled to Bethlehem, they were not alone. They traveled with people. When it tells about Jesus being left in Jerusalem, they thought he was traveling with relatives. So what does that tell you? There were more than just this 20 people. Because you know what? If that was the case, we'd know Josh was missing. Because we all know what Josh looks like, right? So it was a big enough team. And we would know that he wasn't there. Have you ever heard of a guy named Aaron Ralston? Nobody? A few years back, there was a young man that was hiking down in Canyonlands. Up a canyon, and he put his arm up, and an 800-pound rock slid and pinned him to the wall. He was there, he stood there for 5 days with his arm nailed to the wall, and he was starting to die, so he cut his arm off with a pocket knife, a dull pocket knife. Nobody was looking for him because they didn't know he'd gone climbing. They didn't know where he, if they had known, they didn't know where he was. He walked out of there minus one arm, the lower part of his arm, because he cut it off with a dull pocket knife. But he's alive because of it. So the question is, who are you traveling with? Who knows where you are? Are you alone? Never. We got Jesus Christ with us. Guiding us, directing us, leading the way, making things happen, making things happen. This is part of the lead up to the Last Supper. Jesus took the people and let them know where he was going. Even in his crucifixion, he did not go alone. He had his friends there, to a degree. Well, yeah, he had his friends there. Because what happened at the crucifixion? All the men boogied. The women are the ones that stayed. They're the ones that stayed. So they weren't traveling alone. But he does another little comparison here. In this, he says, a cord of three strands is not quickly broken. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. Alone, I'm a piece of string. Together with you, we are a rope, not quickly broken. Not quickly broken. But it takes more than just one piece of string. And if you look at a rope, that's all it is. It's just a bunch of pieces of string that are woven, wound together that make it incredibly strong. And that's what happens in our lives. Together, we make each other strong. We make each other strong and gives us strength. I just thought of an incident when we were younger, probably your age or a little bit younger than you. My parents, we used to go to movies, and the movie theater was 2.5 miles from home. My parents would drop us off, but we had to walk home, and we always went to scary movies. Anybody else do that? We love scary movies. So we'd go to the scary movies, and we'd walk home in the dark, past Hobo Village. The only time my sister ever carried a purse was when we walked home, because it had a big rock in the bottom of it that you could swing. Never had to use it, but we were prepared. And there was more than one of us. And we made a lot of noise. So in this series about doing life together, about relationships, two are better than one. You want to have people with you because they can build you up, they can pick you up, they can keep you warm, they can help scare people off because you're not alone. And the other part of that is, if we live our lives in such a way that people look at us and they see that we have Jesus Christ in our lives, they'll know that we're not alone. And then they might ask, why? Why are you different from everybody else? Because one of the sad things about the world today is there's a lot of people who are Christians whom you question. We need to be the light. We need to be the light. And then the message, it says, the solitary person is completely alone. No children, no family, no friends, yet working. Obviously late into the night, compulsively greedy for more. Never bothering to ask, why am I working like a dog? Never having any fun. And who cares? More smoke and bad business. It's better to have a partner than to go it alone. Share the work, share the wealth. And if one falls down, the other helps. But if there's no one to help, tough. Two in a bed warm each other. Alone, you shiver all night. By yourself, you're unprotected. With a friend, you can face the worst. Can you ground up a third, and a third strand rope isn't easily snapped? Little bit different way of looking at it. Would you pray with me? Living God, thank you. Thank you for King Solomon, who had so much wisdom from you, to 3,000 years ago, give us some good advice on how to be in a relationship with each other and the benefits that come from being in that relationship and the hazards of being alone without relationship. And it's true, Lord, that with you in our lives, we're never alone, but it also takes being in relationship with other people that are in touch with you also. So, Lord, guide us and direct us. Help us, Lord, in our lives to communicate with other people because they are an important part of our lives. So we can know, Lord, who will stand with us and who we will stand with in those times when we need. Because, Lord, when we build our relationships with each other, when there is no problem at all in our lives, that's when we will be stronger together when there is a problem. Help us to grow so that we can serve in love and in passion. So thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.